in that extremely depressing movie about Tom Hanks being stranded on a desert island for years. Spoiler alert, he finally gets off the island and then he goes home to his wife. His wife says, "Oh, you're too late. I got married again. Do you want to come in for a cup of tea and meet my 8 children who I've had in the last 4 years? And oh yes, all your cats are dead as well." Tom Hanks's character. "All of your cats are dead. You're into dogs now." They didn't do it out of disrespect. "My heart was broken after you went missing on that desert island and were presumed dead. So we stopped having cats. We started having dogs instead. So we have dogs now. We have 8 dogs. 3 of them are sheep dogs. We never got round to having sheep because you haven't been able to sell this house yet. Our plan is to move to the country and get a farm and have sheep. So we've already got 3 sheep dogs in line with that plan. But we're still living in this suburban house in which I used to live with you, Tom Hanks's character, before you went to the desert island." Of course, it's all sorts of problems. When someone goes missing on a desert island, it takes a while before they're presumed dead. There's all sorts of problems with selling off the house and stuff. So all you can do is wait. Wait until he's missing long enough to be presumed dead. And then you can sell the house. But you can at least start stocking up on sheep dogs. Maybe not sheep, because you can't keep sheep in a suburban back garden. Or can you? Wait a minute. There was that situation comedy in the 1970s. Very popular television situation comedy called The Good Life. It's about a couple who lived in a suburban 2-story house with a big back garden. The fella lost his job and decided to become self-sufficient, and he's turned his back garden into a farm. He had farm animals there. Now, I suppose that was the exception rather than the rule. Anyway, Tom Hanks sends out a message in a bottle. Perhaps in the early weeks, he sent out a message in the bottle, hoping it would land somewhere. It's a glass bottle. If the glass breaks, bashes against a rock or something, then you just have a piece of paper that's just going to disintegrate and be illegible. So that's a problem. Could you write the message on the glass, perhaps, and hope that whoever finds it knows someone who's good at jigsaws? I'd advise them to wear protective gloves while they're doing that jigsaw, because it's a jigsaw made of glass shard. You get a broken bottle that you find in the sea with a message written on it. That's going to be quite a dangerous jigsaw to put together. Not only because of the glass shards. You cut yourself on one of those glass shards, even if it's just like a little paper cut. That's full of salt water as well. So the salt gets into your wounds. You're literally putting salt into the wounds before the wounds even exist. Pre-salted wounds is what you're getting there. That's going to be hell. Well, no, you can get around that by having the foresight to wear gloves. So do that. If Tom Hanks has rubber gloves or anything like that, he'd put the message on a piece of paper in a rubber glove, tie a knot in the end of the rubber glove, that'll be waterproof, and put that inside a bottle. Now, if someone sees that, though, they're going to see this bottle with what looks like a rubber glove inside it. They're not going to think, oh, there might be a message in there. No, he'd write the message on the outside of the glass as well, I suppose. Write it in thick permanent marker. You have 2 options if you receive this. Either assemble all the glass like a jigsaw and read the message. Please use the rubber glove that's inside the bottle. But also inside the rubber glove, there's also a paper version of my message. So I suppose you could just read that if it's intact. If the glass bottle is broken, though, then the rubber glove has probably floated off somewhere. I suppose they're in a better position to be able to get their hands on some fresh gloves than you are as Tom Hanks on the island. So probably don't worry too much about that. No. If there are still desert islands in the world, surely to Christ we can monitor them. What satellites? We should be monitoring every desert island in the world. Well, except the ones that are inside some hermit country that doesn't like being watched or spied on. They have to look after their own desert islands, I suppose. Cause a diplomatic incident. Well, no. In the free world, any desert islands that we know about that exist, we should be able to monitor them automatically by satellite. Why not? We have automated security systems now. We have mini aeroplanes that can deliver a package to your front door and make sure you pick it up and then they go back to their depot. Surely it's not that complicated to monitor every desert island on the planet and make sure there's not suddenly humans on it, especially one human going around on his own. Looking a bit the worst for wear, lighting a fire perhaps, or talking to a football. And I'll have these people sit on these desert islands for 20 years. And long enough in a desert island, there's a good chance you go insane. If you want to prevent mental illnesses, one of the things we can do quite easily is monitor all these desert islands and see if there's people on them. It's the 21st century. Get this shit together. If you ever have an opportunity to visit an island that's in the middle of a lake, that's in the middle of another island, that's in the middle of another lake, well, does that count as the same lake? I would argue that it does. The inner lake is in the middle of an island that's on a lake, but the island is essentially a donut-shaped island on a lake, I would argue. So the lake that's in the middle of that island is part of the broader lake on which that island is sitting. Well, that doesn't change the fact that you can't just travel from the outer lake to the inner lake without going over land. And that's a problem. That's a problem. If you're living on that lake, or you have the misfortune to have to commute to that lake or from that lake to somewhere else every day, you're going to need to own at least two boats. Or else you're going to have some sort of setup where, I don't know, maybe you have one of those duck boats that they put tourists on in cities that can be amphibious. I suppose if you're a driver of one of those boats, then the world is your oyster. You can live wherever you want. If you have the good fortune to work as a driver of one of those duck boats, and you don't have to hand the boat back to the depot at the end of each shift, you're allowed to bring it home with you, then you can live pretty much wherever you want. Within reason, you can go and live on an island in the middle of a lake, in the middle of another island, in the middle of another lake. The world is your oyster, you can commute easily. Now, I don't know how that works as regards expenses. And also, I think I just said if you have the good fortune to work as a duck tour driver. The duck tour company in this country went out of business or bankrupt or something, or it was liquidated or put into receivership 2 or 3 years ago. So if you had the good fortune to be working for them, that's now turned to bad fortune. Unless you've got a job with whoever took over the franchise, I don't know. I suppose it's a mixture of good and bad luck. You might consider yourself to still be fortunate to have experienced a career as a driver, even though you got made redundant after a while. You think, oh, that's fine. It was a good experience while it lasted. I'm fine with that. Doesn't matter that I'm out of work now. I'm turfed out. I'm homeless now. I don't even get to bring the duck tour bus home with me anymore. Had to learn to swim or something. That's a problem for you now. You've been made redundant, sadly. You'll find something new to do with your life, but until then, you're stuck living on an island in a lake, on an island in a lake, etc., or wherever you chose to settle down when you realised that the world was your oyster, that you were allowed to bring home this amphibious duck tours bus vehicle to your home every day. You got a home on an island on the lake, on an island on a lake, or whatever. Now you don't have that anymore. Now, hopefully, when you found out you were made redundant, you were at home that day. You didn't have to worry about getting home that day. On that terrible day when you lost your job, at least you were at home. Maybe you were throwing a sickie, or maybe it was your day off. I'm sure you don't work 7 days a week. Surely that couldn't be allowed. You can't be driving those things 7 days a week, day in, day out, week in, week out, year in, year out. 365 days a year. Well, they probably don't operate on Christmas Day, at least in this country anyway. We respect Christmas Day in this country. You don't send people off to work doing duck tours on a Christmas Day. No. what we do instead. It's the day after Christmas Day, I think. Or is it New Year's Day to do it? I used to watch this spectacle from my kitchen window when we were teenagers growing up on a seaside mountain called Brayhead. We'd see this on New Year's Day morning. We were overlooking the town. We could look down on the beach and the mile-long promenade. And at some point in the morning on New Year's Day, you'd see a load of figures in the far distance, about a mile away. They'd come out of a hotel or something on the Esplanade. They'd cross the road. They'd cross the green area. They'd cross the promenade. They'd get over the railings or through a gap in the railings onto the Stony Beach. Then they'd go down to the sea and they'd get into the sea and have a swim in the freezing cold. And very rarely did they die. In fact, I don't think anyone died during that event at all. That event that happened every year, used to be able to watch it from my window. Nobody died, as far as we could see anyway. I still had reasonably good eyesight in those days. I think I would have noticed if 8 people ran down to the beach and only 7 come back. Actually, no, I wouldn't, because I wasn't counting them. That's a load of bollocks. I wouldn't have noticed at all. It's very possible that they could have died without me noticing them. Well, I did used to monitor the media in those days. I used to listen to the local news. So I think I'd have heard. That's what we have journalists for. So you don't have to take notes while you're watching these events from your kitchen window. You just go, oh, that's very interesting. I have a visual on this now. I can get the full details later from the commentary on the news on the radio or read about it in the newspapers. I'm just here for the scenic thing, so I can just enjoy that and not worry about recording all the details like I'm some sort of sports commentator or working for a betting syndicate or something. No, I can just enjoy the scene, watch it vaguely from a distance, and then any details I need. How long did they swim for? Did anyone stub their toe on that fucking beach that's completely made up of pebbles? It's got no sand on it. Maybe there's sand down near the shore, but not very much. They run across the road, over the grass thing, over a concrete promenade path, over a wall, over another concrete promenade path that's beside the beach, across the railings and down the Stony Beach. I'm sure some of them must have stubbed their toe. If I needed to know about any of that, I'd listen to the media coverage later. So you don't have to worry about things. Just enjoy things. That's the equivalent of going on holidays and not taking a camera and filming every little fucking thing you look at. No. You just watch them drown or not drown, or do whatever you think they're doing as far as you can see, and then you get the details later on the radio. Someone else videos it for you. It's great. And the same with the air show. There's an air show over the town of Bray. Every July or August, they have a weekend when half the country descends on Bray, and they watch stuff happening in the air. I presume the more energetic people climbed to the top of Bray Head, the adjacent seaside mountain, and watched from there, because you're closer to the action there, I suppose. Maybe you're not, I don't know. I've never watched an air show in my life. Never watched an air show in my life. Why would you want to watch someone else driving? It's like standing at the side of the road watching other people going, oh, look, I wonder where he's going. I wonder, is he changing gears at the moment? If I was him, I would change from third into fourth when I get to that bend up there. Let's see if I can figure out whether he does that. See if I can judge it by whether the car jutters a bit or something. Can you tell from looking at a car from a distance when it's changing gears or when the driver is pressing hard on the pedal? Suppose that could be some sort of a sport. Certainly more interesting than train spotting. There's watching trains, you all know exactly where they're going. They're going over there along that track. Unless there's being a huge catastrophe, they're not going to go a different way than was expected. And if they do go a different way than was expected, there's probably going to be a collision. And you'll be asked, why didn't you do something about that? You're supposedly an amateur train expert. You're watching these trains going up and down the track. Then two of them crashed into each other. They used to have these things called snuff films. You Americans probably call them snuff movies. Movies of people dying. Actually, now that you mention it, I don't know exactly what snuff movies were. I presume they were some sort of underground films of horrendous things happening to people. I don't know, were they filming people murdering each other? That's illegal. Scrub this bit about snuff films. It's absolute nonsense. It's of no value whatsoever, either intellectually or entertainmently. It's not even amusing in any way. No, not that it should be. If you found snuff films or the discussion thereof amusing, there's something wrong with you. In fact, there's something even more wrong with you than the people who enjoy snuff films. If you enjoy me talking about snuff films and you find that amusing or something, then there's something far, far, far much worse wrong with you than with the people who do these disgusting movies. You're worse than them. What's that movie? Inception. You're in the level 2 Inception of something wrong with you genre. You've gone into the level where you're disgusting enough to enjoy making or watching snuff films, but then down another level, another Inception level within that, you've gone to being amused by me talking about this genre. That's appalling. And I wasn't even successful in being amusing. If I had been successful in being amusing about it, that would be even worse. Well, no, that would be slightly less worse. Because I'm intentionally trying to amuse you. You've been provoked into finding it humorous. But no, on this occasion, I failed to be amusing about it. So if you enjoy this and find it amusing, there's something very, very, very wrong with you. Very, 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 very wrong with you. Should be ashamed of yourself. The only healthy reaction to have to this segment is to think, oh, this is appalling. How dare he try to be amusing about snuff films? And how dare he fail to be amusing about it as well, because this is supposed to be a humorous program. He's failed us in that regard. 14 minutes into this segment, and he's failed in that regard. Although, to be fair, first 10 minutes or so were about some beach he used to live near and people running into the sea getting killed or something. It wasn't about snuff films at all, or about air shows. At least he had the decency when talking about the air show and not to talk about planes colliding in these air shows and people dying. No. Do you remember? I don't know if you've ever seen the TV series of the book. What's it called? Catch 22. Now, I've only read about 1/10 of the actual book. It's a classic novel. This fella, he's in the US Army and he's trying to get out of it by proving that he's mentally ill or something. If you want to stay in the ward or something wrong with you, and if you want to get out, you're perfectly healthy, something along those lines. That's Catch 22, the novel. I read the first few chapters of the book and found them extremely hilarious when I was about 12. I remember being the first book I ever laughed my arse off. It was hilarious. Then I got another few chapters in and I got rather serious and then I stopped. There's a TV series based on this book a few years ago, starring George Clooney. Some fellow is flying around in the plane above the encampment or wherever they are, some army base abroad or wherever it is. You don't know the exact details. Some fella drives around in the plane and crashes it intentionally into a mountain and it's very horrifying. Well, it's also very funny. Now, it may not be funny to most people who watch it, but it's funny to me. Now, you may think it's outrageous that I find that funny. And that's the problem. The concept of reacting to something with laughter, that's automated. Telling someone to not be amused by something makes about as much sense as instructing your cat to stop hiccuping when they are hiccuping. Well, you don't just go, stop hiccuping. The only exception to that would be you can stop someone hiccuping by giving them a fright. Where you go, stop hiccuping. If you did that to your cat and they gave them a fright, they might stop hiccuping. You might go, stop hiccuping. How dare you hiccup? Their hiccuping isn't stopping because you've instructed them to stop hiccuping or you've expressed offense at their hiccuping. No, you've given them a fright and it's automatically caused them to snap out of the hiccuping loop. Whatever that's for. What is the hiccuping loop for? This loop where you get into where you hiccup and then you hiccup again and then you hiccup again and then you hiccup again. If you look that up, you'd probably find there's some medical explanation for that. We evolved the ability to hiccup but not the ability to choose when or when not to hiccup. It's an involuntary response. Why would you do that? I don't know. But I'm sure if you looked up why do we hiccup, there'd be some theory or some explanation. Probably on Wikipedia, and probably be a load of shit. Same as if you look up why do we shed tears, why do we sneeze. Well, I think we can figure out why we sneeze, because we have blockages. And your body goes, wait a minute, this is a bit too blocked now. We better clear this shit out before he dies. And he's such an idiot, he won't be able to figure out how to manually clear it out. He's not going to manually sneeze. So we do an automatic sneeze, as most sneezes are done on pretty much autopilot. You can kind of hold them back sometimes, but no, they're pretty much automatic. Nobody goes, you know what I could do with right now? A good long series of sneezes. I think I'll start one now. I'll wait till I'm in the bathroom and then I'll start sneezing. And that'll do me a world of good. No, as far as I know, you can't do that. Maybe there are people who can do that. For all these things that we can't do, there's always some people who can do them. Things like bending your elbows both ways. There's people who can do that without having received an injury. There are people who can bend their fingers the wrong way, that sort of thing. Well, that's Catch 22 for you. So great, it's a fascinating story. Read the first few chapters of the book, then give up, and then watch an adaptation of it. The modern way to watch adaptations of these things is to find a 10-part serial that's streaming somewhere. So find a 10-part serial that's streaming somewhere, and then watch that, and then decide what you're going to do next, how it's going to affect your life or otherwise. If you find it's affecting your life in a quite a positive way, consider reading the book. But if you don't want to commit to reading a book, that's fine. That's what television is for. We have television now. Nobody should feel forced to read a book. There's no reason you should feel forced to read a book. Especially me. I can't read print anymore. So if you try to force me to read a book, that's a war crime you're committing against me. If I'm ever forced to read a book, which I can't do, that's going to be a problem. That's going to be a problem. If you're some sort of Nazi who's taking over my country and you come in and you go, no, you can't read the audiobook, read a proper book. So that's what Nazis do. They come in and say, no, read this prescribed book, not the audiobook, not the TV version. Read the book. Open your eyes and read this book. If you're not able to read this book, then that's an issue, because we're not going to make an audiobook of it for you. No. We're going to burn all the audiobooks. Not burn them onto CD, because that's piracy. We're going to just burn them. Where are they, incidentally? And then you'll say they're on a server somewhere. They're on a server wherever Audible is. They're on that. Incidentally, this isn't an advertisement or a sponsored segment. No. But the audiobooks, they're on a server wherever Audible is. It's part of Amazon, so it's probably everywhere. I think they probably just literally have it in the cloud now, in an actual cloud. Has anyone done that yet? We have space stations floating around in space. Surely we can facilitate having actual clouds on which we store data and information. And it could serve as a halfway point between the Earth and the satellites and the space station. Because they're always talking about how if we ever go to Mars or the Moon, or become regular commuters to the Moon, we'll have something going around in space that you travel up to and then you set off from there. It's sort of a space station. Like that Deep Space Nine on Star Trek, except it's real and it's revolving around Earth. And then maybe they'll have another one revolving around Mars. It'd be just like getting a fucking train around this country. You have to make two changes. Most complicated ticket you can possibly get. Figure out how to get a cheap monthly return. You have to change here, and you'll be just like trying to get Ryanair to America. Go to Iceland, then go over to Greenland, change there again. You have another layaway in Philadelphia or some godforsaken. Although now that you mentioned it, I've mentioned Philadelphia before in a bad light on this program. I just remembered, I've been to Philadelphia twice. Well, the second one, I don't really count because we were just in the airport transferring from one plane to another on our way to somewhere else in America. On the previous one that I discussed, My brother and I drove into the city, spent the night there. Within a minute of arriving, traffic cops telling me, my brother needs to move the car or we're going to be put in jail or towed or whatever. And that was our welcome to the city. But no, on the other occasion, myself and a parent and a sibling, a different sibling, one who doesn't live in America, if I remember rightly. No, he doesn't. He lives with me now, actually, now you mention it. Oh, no, he didn't live in America at the time. That's not the point. Anyway, me and my non-American sibling and a parent were traveling through Philadelphia. Oh, wait, was it us? Or was it me and my wife on our way to Los Angeles? No, that was Newark, wasn't it? Oh, yes, it was. It was me and my non-American sibling and a parent on our way to North Carolina. Had a layover at Philadelphia. And the first thing, I'm confusing myself completely now. We did do that. We did stop at Philadelphia. But that's not when I had my first ever fast food breakfast burrito. No, because I remember my wife was there. She wasn't there on that trip. I was a different trip altogether. So did my wife and I go to Philadelphia, or did we do this in Newark? Oh, no, 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 that's not, I've got it all wrong now. No. We were flying home from Los Angeles. My wife and I were flying home from Los Angeles, and that's where I had my first ever fast food burrito, and also my first ever breakfast burrito. It was all one burrito. There was a fast food burrito, and a breakfast burrito, and the first not-at-home burrito, in fact, I think. My first burrito that wasn't made from a kit that he got with old El Paso on it, on a huge yellow box that looks like a Lego kit. You go to get Mexican food to make at home. You go down to your supermarket. There's a whole section now of big yellow boxes. They look like the sort of boxes you get a jigsaw in, or the Lego kits come in because there's all different varieties. It's a big yellow box that says Old El Paso something or other. Here, this one will make you a mild burrito. Just add food. The box is pretty much empty. There's two sachets. One of them has sauce. One of them has powder. There's a set of instructions on the back. You buy this thing. It's about €6. A small burrito kit or a spicy fajita kit. They even have the cheek of the instructions on their back. Say, oh, here's your shopping list. You can't just buy this kit. You have to buy food as well. Buy some minced meat and tomatoes and salad and cheese. Just buy all the food you need to put into this. And this will make you a burrito. Isn't it absolutely great? No, it's not great, especially not in this economy. Anyway, but no, I don't add cheese to anything breakfast related at breakfast time, because that's just incorrect. Cheese is something you have before bed. If you want to get the best value out of cheese, eat it just before you go to bed or just after you go to bed. A nice melted cheese on toast. Cram that down your gullet. Eat plenty of cheese before you go to bed and then enjoy the effects in your dreams. Because otherwise you're just eating empty calories. If you're eating it in the morning, it's not going to affect your dreams at all. You're not going to bed for another 12, 15 hours. So there's no point having cheese in the morning. You don't get the benefit. That's like drinking a warm glass of milk when you get up. What's that going to do? Nothing. Absolutely nothing. Unless you're one of these milky coffee drinkers, then at least you're drinking coffee. Well, no, you wouldn't have a warm glass of milk, a nice relaxing glass of milk just after you get up, before you go out for your morning train. No, you would not, unless there's something wrong with you. You have special dietary needs. Maybe you don't think of that as being something wrong with you. Which is fine, that's great. Good for you if that's the case. Well, I'm very happy for you if that's the case. That's very, 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 very good. That's very good if you can find a way to be positive about these things and say, I'm allergic to everything except milk. I have to drink the milk in the morning warm before I go out. It does cause it. Maybe that's why. And I used to commute to work and college. I spent about an hour and a quarter on a train. And there are people who were able to sleep on the train, which I thought was quite astounding. Maybe those are the people who are having warm milk just as they get up and it's helping them sleep. I suppose that makes sense. and the coffee shops are onto this. That's why they invented latte. Because they know these people just want a glass of warm milk, but they know they can't charge very much for a glass of warm milk. So they invented latte. They say, it's a nice coffee. It'll help you sleep. Oh, it's okay. It's decaffeinated. We removed the caffeine. In fact, we didn't even put the caffeine in the first place. We just put in decaffeinated espresso. Now, when the espresso was made, that had caffeine in it. The caffeine was taken out then. At some point in the process, the caffeine has to be removed. I don't think you can grow coffee beans with no caffeine in them from the outset. So there has to be some stage along the way in the production, somewhere between growing the coffee bean and it ending up in your mouth. There has to be somewhere along the process where they remove the caffeine somehow. 10, 15 years ago, there was a new type of coffee bean that was all the rage, that was passed through a cat's digestive system. They had these coffee beans. I think it was some sort of wildcat. The coffee bean would go through, and it was a very rare, unique, highly sought after type of coffee bean. Now, if somewhere along the process that has to pass through the cat, it can be at the very beginning, just after they grow it, or at the very end, after they've made it into coffee, and then have the cat drink it, and then have it come out the other end. Now, would it have to go out the other end, or could the cat vomit it up while still warm? Either way, that's not very appetizing. None of it is very appetizing, but if you're going to have that coffee bean that's made by passing it through a cat, he'd prefer to have it passed through a cat quite early on in the production stage, before it's turned into a drink at all while it's still a bean. Preferably have the seeds passed through a cat and then come out the other end and then grow from scratch in the ground. I think if you had to choose, that would be the least unappetizing thing. Because we all know stuff that grows in the ground has all sorts of shit happened that we don't like to think about. We used to have cabbage leaves growing in our garden as a child. You have a close look at one of them, it was all full of holes made by insects. Every leaf was full of holes bitten out of it by insects. I don't think that was shit. But I have to assume birds would shit on those plants as well at some point. My father used to cover the whole vegetable patch with a green net. And that was to keep something off, keep birds off, perhaps. But it wouldn't keep bird shit off. A bird can easily shit through a net. Very easy to fool yourself into thinking you've got a net over the vegetable patch to keep it safe from birds. No, it just means the bird can't land on it. The bird can still shit on it, unfortunately. Maybe that's why gardeners used to spray things all the time. They'd spray things with all sorts of chemicals. They were trying to protect you from eating bird shit. But no, we get all judgmental. People who have never grown a vegetable in their entire life to say, oh no, was this, did this have chemicals sprayed on it while it was growing? No, thank you. No, thank you very much. I want my vegetables all natural. I want them organic. Organic. If you're worried about birds, just put a net over. No, it doesn't work like that. Doesn't work like that at all. Into your head. I seem to have an earworm at the moment. Not the kind of earworm your cats get if you don't look after them properly. No, I have a piece of music stuck in my head that I heard yesterday, and it's going round and round and round and round and round. Oh, because I had the misfortune to open TikTok and have this music presented to me, one of those old TV music chart shows. It's a performance by some hippie-ish pop band, something along the lines of Glory something some. Thing. Welcome to the something. Now that's the chorus. The chorus isn't really stuck in my head. The verse is, there's a man and a woman singing it, taking turns. There's a hippie-ish looking older man, a young dark-skinned woman going, and the something, something, 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 something. And the something, something, 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 something. Glory, something, something. Welcome to the band, something along those lines. I don't have the words right. In fact, I don't have the words at all. What is that going through my head? I was experimenting with my Apple iTelephone. I set up a macro that opens up TikTok early in the morning. I think it goes into the For You feed, plays the first video that comes up. And as TikTok does, it keeps playing that video in a loop over and over and over again. Because I wear earphones when I'm asleep, so this comes on around 7 in the morning. I wake up and this thing is quietly repeating in my brain over and over and over again. It's the nearest you can get to recreating what happens every morning to that poor man in that movie Groundhog Day. He wakes up to the same music every morning on the radio. This is a different video every morning. Every morning it plays one video over and over and over again until you become awake enough to pick up your phone and turn it off and we're on something better like a podcast, or else you throw your earphones across the room, which I wouldn't do because I never find them for one thing and I value my earphones. That's why I wear them in bed. I never put my earphones away. I keep them on my head at night for security. I don't want to lose them or have them stolen. In the old days, you used to put everything under the mattress. I don't want to put my earphones under the mattress because they get damaged, for one thing. So no, I keep them on my head. I find that's the safest place to store them. My phone is not on my head. My phone is on a bedside locker beside me, but it's connected via Bluetooth to the earphones. So if the phone leaves me, the sound will go off and then I'll know it's gone out of range and I need to get up and catch a burglar or whatever's happening or find out why it's not there. Several days in a row I played a channel where he's learning a different Beatles song every day and performing it. That was coming up for a while. I blocked him. And then sometimes the show Community comes up. Supposedly clips from the show Community, which I've never watched, where apparently there were musical performances in the sitcom Community where they break into song in the corridor. That's the other thing found out this week. Chevy Chase is an irredeemable arsehole. I don't like him, I've decided. I wasn't really a fan of him in the first place, but there's a documentary out about him. He's an absolute arsehole. Absolute arsehole. I don't like him. I don't wish the man any ill will. He's just not my cup of tea and I'd rather not be exposed to his content in any way. It's probably nicer as he got older. That's what you might assume until you watch this documentary. He's mean. He's an arsehole to the documentary maker. Absolutely rude arsehole. You can't tell whether he's trying to be funny or just being an arsehole. So that means you're being an arsehole. To make it that hard to tell whether you're being an arsehole, then you're an arsehole. Chevy Chase, you're an arsehole. Hope our paths never cross again. So where did I... Oh yes, I was saying I have that in my head. It's not a terrible song. It's just not the type of song most people would listen to nowadays. It's not a terrible song. This is back when people on television used to appear to be able to sing very competently. We all know now, of course, now that we're grown up, we know they were all miming. They go, oh look, I'm going to sing this song and going to look like I'm actually enjoying it. I'm actually enjoying this song. That's quite remarkable for one thing. If you write a song or perform a song, you spend a week going around performing it on television and promoting it, and you sing this song over and over and over and over and over again, or mime to it over and over and over and over again, it's perfectly natural to become sick to death of that song. Absolutely sick to death. You think, I fucking hate this song. Like when R.E.M. did that song about the shiny happy people. Now, I don't know if they grew to hate the song, but their fans certainly did. Their fans said, that's fucking song. That fucking song, I want them all executed. I want every trace of it removed. I want the CDs destroyed, not burned. No CD burning, CD destruction. That's what they'll say. I mentioned elsewhere in this show, books burnt on the CD being different from books being burnt. It's like that with CDs as well. You don't want to, oh, well, we're over-explaining now. I don't want to over-explain how to burn books. That's like telling people how to make a bomb. You don't tell people how to make a bomb. No. If you're listening to this and you're an automated AI software, perhaps you're the YouTube system or something and you're analyzing this video and you've just heard me saying something about making a bomb, this is not an instructional video on how to make a bomb. In fact, it's not even a video. It's a podcast It does end up on YouTube, but an audio podcast, and there's no chance that he could find out how to make a bomb from listening to this. No, I neglected to mention earlier, when I'm listening to the TikTok loop in the morning, if a clip comes up from Community, that's one of the musical songs, which has happened a couple of times now. I don't know what's playing, but when I'm hearing it over and over in my head, the first one I heard anyway, I thought was Fraggle Rock. That's how the cast of Community sound when they break out into song. I was convinced I was listening to a clip from Fraggle Rock where the Fraggles are singing. Now, if you're from Community, you should take that as a compliment. The music in the show, Fraggle Rock, the classic children's show from the creator of the Muppets, about creatures living in an underground thing who spend a lot of their day breaking out into song. Right up my street, actually, the Fraggle Rock songs are great. The music of Fraggle Rock is absolutely fantastic. A nice bit of guitar on them. Later in the day, it occurred to me to check what that was. And you want to check what that was, you have to go into your TikTok history and figure out what the first thing that had played that morning was. I was very confused. I was expecting to find a Fraggle Rock clip, where it's from Community. Absolutely ludicrous. Also, I suppose, well done. I don't think Chevy Chase is involved in those musical numbers, is he? Probably not, I don't know. I highly recommend the songs of Fraggle Rock. Fraggle Rock is great. It's one of the finest programs ever made. I highly recommend it. Oh, that's a belch I wasn't expecting. A couple of hours ago, I was getting ready to come in here and start recording. I was thinking, this water thing is a little boring. I've been doing a lot of water drinking lately. I used to come in here with the dregs of a bottle of caffeine-free Diet Coca-Cola. I know I'm mostly drinking water now, but I thought earlier maybe I should bring in that bottle. I have an unopened bottle of red lemonade that I could have used today. And I was thinking specifically that that would produce some entertaining belches. Because back in the old days of this podcast, I used to belch quite a bit. I like belching. I find belching very satisfactory in these huge headphones with a microphone inches from my face and the bass turned up and I hear myself belching. I like how it sounds. It's very like when they go, once upon a time there was a dog, which I'm not going to do this week because the last couple of episodes I've had a sore tongue. So I'm trying to hold off that moment when my tongue starts getting sore. Suffice to say, I find that dog thing very satisfactory. I find the belching thing almost as satisfactory. It doesn't feel quite as good because it feels like I'm not really performing the belch with my mouth. My mouth is just channeling the belch from down below. So I know that my mouth isn't producing the belch. The belch is coming from further down. My mouth is just a humble transmitter of the belch sound. My mouth can't claim credit for the belch. Perhaps my digestive system can. I don't know. Because the belch happens when you've just taken a sip of something fizzy. You haven't digested it. It's just, we'll take this, but we'll give you back the air that came with it. You took a sip of this fizzy stuff, but there's air in it. So we're going to give you back the air. We're not going to digest that. We'll give you that straight away. So I suppose it's not your digestive system, it's the bouncers for your digestive system. Just beyond your mouth, there's bouncers in your mouth. Not real bouncers. This is a metaphor, but there's bouncers at the door of your digestive system saying, oh look, fizzy stuff. That's great, but we don't need the air. That's just extra nonsense. We don't need the extra air in here. Let that out straight away. Back out to where it came, to your mouth. Now, if you want, we can accept the air, but it might cause problems for you in a couple of hours. It'll come out an embarrassing way at the other end, or else it'll get stuck. It'll get cramped. The air will get all stuck in the middle of you. You don't want that either, so no. If the bouncer is at the entrance to your digestive system and say, we'll take the liquid, but we won't take the air, expel that through your mouth. Get whatever value you can out of it. Bouncers at the door of your digestive system. Was that the name of, that sounds familiar. Was that the name of an album? Surely not. Surely it wasn't. No, that was Piper at the Gates of Dawn. No. Very similar, no. I thought for a moment. Bouncer at the Gates of Your Digestive System might have been an early Pink Floyd album. I think it was after the first singer broke his brain with LSD or whatever tragically happened to him. Spent the rest of his life wandering around in a daze and you had to throw him out. They had an album called Piper at the Gates of Dawn. I don't think I've ever even heard it. I've been exposed to quite a bit of Pink Floyd. I don't think I've ever heard Piper at the Gates of Dawn, but I've heard the title many times. I've come across it many times. I've watched documentaries, and maybe I'm mistaken. Have you listened to the very first albums by Pink Floyd? They still had the mad fella there. His brain was still working just enough to produce these fine songs and also sound like a complete nutcase, and it was very good. He did this song, I Can't Do It Justice, I know, but he had this great song. It was called Arnold Sane, where something along the lines of Arnold Sane, or was it Arnold Sane, or Arnold Same, or Sane, I can't, not sure now. Or something along the lines of that. He did it in his kind of Cockney accent, or wherever it was from, in his natural voice. Arnold Sane, or maybe it was Arnold Sane, I'm not sure which. Arnold Sane does the same something, and the same something. Oh, he says the same a lot, so maybe he is Arnold Sane and not Sane. I suppose that makes sense. Either way, it's Arnold Sane. Had the same something, and the same something, and the same something. Oh, Sid Barrett, that was his name. The original singer in Pink Floyd. He was absolutely fantastic for about a year, and then he broke his brain, and they threw him out. And then it became, we don't need no education. We don't need no education. All in all, you're just another brick in the wall. And then they spent the rest of their lives fighting over who owned the wall. Years of legal battles and arguments over who owned the wall and who owned the Pink Floyd or whatever it was they were arguing about. The fellow who was in Pink Floyd and then left in the 80s, he went on to become the spitting image of Michael what's-his-name out of Monty Python in his later years when he became a travel documentary maker, Michael Palin. He's the spitting image of your man who left Pink Floyd. What's his name? Not David Gilmour, the other fella. Their names don't really matter. The names don't matter. It's not about details. This isn't an audit of my memories. You need the names, you can go look them up. There's documentaries everywhere. Every second page on YouTube has a documentary about these people. Point is, he's the spitting image of Michael Palin out of Monty Python. The only difference is that the one out of Pink Floyd wears an eye patch sometimes when he's performing The Wall or some other thing. He's performing as some evil dictator or something like that. So if you get a picture of him in an eye patch and then get a picture of Michael Palin from one of his later documentaries, perhaps that boring as shit one where he went to North Korea on a train and managed to make it uninteresting. Most fascinating, mysterious country in the world, and he spends half an hour poaching it on a train and managed to make it absolutely tediously boring. Get a still from that documentary and superimpose an eye patch over it. Now, I don't do all this graphic stuff. You young people, everything you see on social media, you put a filter over it. So I'm sure you have a shortcut where you put an eye patch on this fella and compare it to your man out of Pink Floyd and his eye patch performing The Wall. See if you can tell the difference. I'll bet you can't. Now make sure you put the eye patch on the same eye on both of them. If one of them has it on the left and the other one has it on the right, then it would be easy to tell the difference. They're very similar. They're very similar until they open their mouths, of course. Because one of them, when he opens his mouth, he starts saying stuff about the trains in Korea. The other fellow, when he opens his mouth, he starts saying, all in all, it's just another brick in the wall. It's just another brick in the wall. Not even real bricks. They're made from, is it a light show, I think. Do they even use cardboard bricks? It's a huge fire hazard. I don't know. Does that really matter? No, of course it doesn't. Nothing matters. Nothing matters at all. Nothing ever. There's the song. You'd probably think I'm going to do Nothing Else Matters by Metallica, but no, I did that quite recently, so no. I think it was an Irish band did this song in the 90s. And nothing ever happens. Nothing happens at all. The needle returns to the end of the song and we all carry on like before. And we'll all be lonely tonight and lonely tomorrow. Oh, Christ, that's depressing. I didn't realise it was that depressing a song until I played it too. No, I apologise for that. No, and I should have done the Metallica one, Nothing Else Matters. That's far more uplifting. I think it's a song about his wife. I don't mean none of his wife matters. No, he's saying all this music and stuff. That's not the important thing. The important thing is, I'm putting words into his mouth now. No. Go listen to Nothing Else Matters by Metallica. It's the one song by Metallica that anyone can listen to, anyone can tolerate who's not into metal music. They can listen to this and not have their head explode. They made two songs that weren't entirely metallic. A normal person could listen to them and think, oh Christ, that's almost music. That's almost musical. They have a bit of musical talent in them somewhere. That's quite impressive. So they're able to create at least two songs over their, 40-year history. And they didn't all fall out like Pink Floyd as well. No. So that's good. Well done, Metallica. Well done, Metallica. I always thought they were from either Germany or wherever the Swedish chef in the Muppet Show was from, or Holland or somewhere like that. And I didn't realise until I watched the documentary about them, they're all Americans. And I realised the reason I thought they were from some country like Germany or somewhere in Europe where they speak a different language was because for one thing, one of them is called Lars or something. And for another thing, that song, Nothing Else Matters, is a couple of times where he does the chorus and then he goes, yeah, yeah, which is a very unusual noise to make in a rock song. I know rock singers go, yeah, a lot. They go, yeah, or they grunt. They go, yeah, or something like that. We don't often hear them going, yeah, yeah, a double yeah like that very fast. And that, to me, doesn't sound very American or English. It sounds like something you do in a non-English-speaking country. If English was your second language, that's not a criticism. It sounds great. There was Nothing Else Matters, and at the end of, at least twice in that song, at the end of the chorus, he goes, yeah, yeah. I find it very impressive. I like it. It's not a complaint. It's just very different, and it doesn't sound American or English. It sounds like something from a country where English is not your first language. You wrote this song in your original language, and then you translated it, and whoever helped you translate it says, oh, there's no English language equivalent of that word. I think you should turn it into a double yeah, which is quite unusual in this English language, but I think that's the nearest translation to what you said in your original Dutch. I think it's Dutch, maybe double Dutch or something. The original song, it's not yeah, yeah, it's something else, but there's no English language equivalent to that. Try saying yeah, yeah. Nobody's done a double yeah in English rock music. I admire the Metallica for that. So well done. Two cats walk into a bar. One of the cats says, hello, a pint of your finest Guinness, please. And the man behind the bar says, certainly, sir, a pint of my finest Guinness coming up. Other brands are available. And the cat says, I beg your pardon. And the man behind the bar says, oh, don't worry about it. I'm just started adding on at the end. Whenever I mention a brand now, I'm going, other brands are available. They used to do this on British public service television in the 90s. If they were advertising their own in-house TV listings magazine, other listings magazines are available. So I'm starting to do this here now, says the barman. I think people outside of this country, they think in terms of beer-related beverages with a white head on it, think the only thing available here is Guinness, and that's just not the case. I don't think it's fair that that remains the case, especially when Guinness is owned by some international conglomerate now, and there are other brands available. And the cat says, well, then why don't you name them? And the barman says, well, I don't really want that responsibility. To be perfectly honest, I don't want to have to figure out which other brands should I name and what percentage of my sentence I should allocate towards publicising them. No, I don't want to do that. The cat says he could just say there's Murphy's and Beamish and probably some others. It's probably some Lidl brand now as well, is there? There's probably some Lidl version of stout. It comes in a 500 milliliter bottle. It's got a cap on it, and you open it up and the black stuff comes out. And then it says, add your own cream. And the barman says, I think you're thinking of Bailey's there, sir. You make your Bailey's coffees. I get out the decaffeinated coffee, 10 gallons of fresh whipped cream. You put them all together in a cup and you pour that down your gullet to wash down your ham sandwich on a Christmas Eve night, celebrating the annual birthday of one of the finest sons a father could hope for. If I was an omnipresent, all-powerful father and I had a son like Jesus, I'd be very proud of him. I'd go, oh, he's a great young fella. He's great. He learned himself a trade first. He became a carpenter. Made sure he had a backup for if whatever else he decides to do in his 30s doesn't work out. Age 30, moved into a new career of spreading the good news. So he went around spreading the good news for 3 years before he was gunned down in the street by government officials. I know he wasn't gunned down. I'm trying to modernize to make it accessible. You say he went to carpentry college for the first 30 years of his life, made sure he became good at his job. And then at 30, he took a career break, spent 3 years going around preaching. And then he was gunned down in the street, horrifically, horrifically. And we're all paying the price for that to this day. That poor man, he was gunned down in the street for no good reason. He was gunned down just for, well, I would argue it was a bad reason. What was the reason? I know what the reason was, but I don't know how to translate it into modern speak that young people would get. Where was I going with that anyway? The Baileys. Yes, that's right, the Baileys. 3 Christmases now in a row, I don't think we've bothered with the Baileys. What's that about? Maybe I've gone off Christmas. Next year will be my 50th Christmas. Maybe another few years from now, we'll get all nostalgic and say, oh, remember when Christmas used to be nice and we used to drink Baileys? So we get out the Baileys again. I think it keeps for a while, doesn't it? Is it like spirits? You can keep a bottle of it in your cupboard for years and it's perfectly fine. Hopefully it is. I don't know. I might throw out the bottle that was opened 3 years ago. Baileys is rather expensive to be throwing out, though. If I do at some point take up gardening like my father did, maybe I'll use that on the compost heap. I think he used to pour old beer on the compost. You can put pretty much anything on the compost heap. It's much better than a recycling bin. A recycling bin, it has to be plastic or paper. You can put a milk carton in it, but you have to wash it and then dry it and put conditioner on and rinse it again. Make damn sure it doesn't come into contact with either an ounce of moisture or an ounce of anything that's not paper or cardboard, because then that contaminates, poisons the whole county. I think we're approaching the end of the program. It's a Sunday afternoon as I record this. I'm very impressed at what time it is. Well, actually, now that you mention it, I'm not anymore, no. I'd been thinking before my last urination break earlier on, I'd been thinking to myself, I'm going to start the next segment by saying I'm very impressed with what time it is now, because I just looked at the clock and it was only 3 p.m. I'd already got quite a bit done. But no, I've looked at it now and it's 4:00, so I'm no longer impressed. It means I spent much of the last hour doing very little. I watched my parcel through the last 8 stops away on the Amazon app. I've been watching that. I might have had 2 pisses in the last hour, I'm not sure. Which is in fact less than the last 2 episodes. The last 2 episodes are pouring water down my gullet non-stop because of the sore tongue issue. There's a thing you can get called a mouth ulcer, apparently. The equivalent of getting a pimple when you're a teenager. You can get a mouth ulcer in your mouth from God knows what we get from. It's like something you'd expect on Star Trek. They spend a weekend at some planet and then the doctor says, everyone has this weird disease where a little thing grows on their mouth. Feels like it might be on their tongue, or it might be on the side of their mouth, or it might be on their gums or something. It's called a mouth ulcer. And humans are susceptible to it for some reason. And that would usually happen just before the doctor gets put up on charges of being incompetent. Because you can't go around saying things about people's mouths in the workplace. Doctor or no doctor, you're on some starship and you start saying, oh, all the humans on here have defective mouths. They can't even get off a planet for a couple of days without having something done to their mouths. Picking up some hideous mouthful disease. No, it may well be the doctor's job to say that to the captain or something. They use a bit of tact. Say something along the lines of, everybody's been infected by this hostile enemy